The United States, 4-5% of the world's population, still uses 25% of the world's resources. You outsource production to China and then you say China is the carbon polluter. China's producing your buckets. China's producing your nuts and bolts. China's producing your phones. Try to produce it in your own countries and see your carbon emissions rise. You love lecturing us because you have a colonial mentality. Then there are colonial structures and institutions. You lend us money, and every time you lend us money, which is our money, which is our money, every time the International Monetary Fund comes to our societies and they tell us, here's the money we are giving you. We are giving you. No, it's our money. You give us our money back as debt, and then you lecture us about how we should live. It's extraordinary. It's not just a colonial mentality. It's the colonial structures and institutions which reproduce themselves year after year after year. And let me tell you something. The climate justice movement, not clued enough on this. Not clued enough on this. The climate justice movement is a movement that says we're worried about our future. What future? What future? Children in the African continent, in Asia, in Latin America, they don't have a future. They don't have a present. They're not worried about the future. They're worried about their present. Your slogan is, we're worried about the future. What future? That's a middle class bourgeois Western slogan. You got to be worried about now. 2.7 billion people can't eat now. And you're telling people reduce your consumption. How does this sound to a child who hasn't eaten in days? You got to clue into this, guys. You got to clue into this. Otherwise, this movement will have no legs in the third world. No legs. Later, I'd like to tell you about the International People's Assembly, a network of 200 political organizations that we're setting up, rooted in the global south. We want to tell you what our issues are. But are you willing to listen?
Welcome to The Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. Monday, November 22nd, 2021. Thank you so much for joining me today. Really powerful opening there. And I want to start off with something that actually was sent to me by Melanie, the person that we just interviewed, the nurse who was just forced to resign because of her personal choice. I want to start with reading something like that, but I want to comment on that video, and I'll actually really quickly show you where this came from. This was shared the first place I saw it, but the person who added the subtitles on there was another person who shared it after this. But as it reads, so much of Western climate rhetoric is condescending, colonial, and bourgeois. It's neither realistic nor just, telling 2.7 billion hungry people to reduce consumption, which, I mean, you could argue that's not necessarily what they are saying, but I'm not trying to defend what's going on there, while the rich fly private jets. That's the point. Now, the link will be in here to who this person is and so on. But what it's important to remember is this is also at COP26, right? This is at the climate summit. And so he's arguing, as you can kind of hear in there in a way, is that, well, we need to do this or this movement won't have legs in the third world. So it's not like he's necessarily against all of this, but at the same time is in a lot of ways and is pointing out really what I want you to see is that even people within this movement are recognizing the very obvious Western perspective and the way they're manipulating this. And it's not just about West versus anything else. It's really about the same point we're making over everything else today. It is the same great reset, technocratic future, the people behind it, the World Economic Forum, the WHO, the US's and UK's and China's and Russia's of the world. I think this is all one massive effort that's happening. But what he's pointing out there cannot be missed, because what he's showing you is that there's hypocrisy and contradiction even from within their own group. Like, they're yelling at this. I think what this shows you, to make it quick and easy, is that this person sees that they don't believe or aren't even doing what they claim they're trying to do. And that makes my point. Not in the same way he's making it, but it makes the point that what they're telling you they're driving forward towards is not even realistic. They're not even capable of achieving it or want to achieve it with what they're putting forward right now. Now, as individuals, can we strive for better things for people that are struggling? Of course we can. Look at the greater reset with Derek Brose. J. just recognize that this is an illusion, guys, an illusion from top to bottom, from the way they're driving. That doesn't mean that we couldn't do things to improve our planet, or we shouldn't recognize that we are hurting our planet in a lot of ways, but we shouldn't let the technocrats grab that, harness that, and drive it in their direction, just like they did with oil and petrochemicals and many things we pointed out in the past. Very important. And since I just remembered, I want to give a shout out to the person who just, I don't want to stand up. It says endless bummer, and like a play on endless summer. So thank you for those who just sent that to me, as well as the many, many other people that send me such amazing things, letters, t-shirts, whatever else. And maybe I forget or don't get the chance to say thank you. So everybody out there, thank you so much for all the kind words and things that you've been sending. It goes a long way. Oh, and I just remembered something else I was going to forget to say. I keep forgetting to point out that I was fooled by some telegram thing from Robert Malone. I'm sure you've all figured that out since then, that it wasn't actually Robert Malone. But it just shows you how much is going around out there that is being manipulated. People pretending to be other people and so on. And we can all be fooled by it. It all really matters about whether you rectify it, come back around, make do the right thing. So that was a mistake. The Malone is still on Twitter and so on, if you guys remember what that was from like 4 or 5 days ago. Now, to start, I'd like to begin with something that was sent to me that were really powerful, that will kind of set the tone for where we're going and how we need to stick together. And then, guys, I'm going to start out today with just science. Straight across, we are going to do things a little differently today, because normally I try to pace these things in between other kind of tangential peripheral information, but we're going to start with about 7 things in a row, powerful studies, each of which completely shatter their narrative. And then we'll get into some other things around that after the fact, but we're going to start all in one. Now, you guys let me know which kind of way you like better. Now, first, I want to read this to you. Now, this was sent from Melanie Congas. I'm probably mispronouncing. Yes, it was Congas, making sure I'm saying that properly. I really hope you'll check out the interview I had with her, because it's a really powerful interview, and it's actually really upsetting to see what's going on. I'll grab that while I'm going to read this, because it shows you that they are willing to, this was specifically about the religious exemption, and how they are firing people, even in Catholic, I mean, this is specifically a church or a nursing home for nuns, and she was forced to resign, even though she was claiming a religious exemption, and they just said, we don't care, believe you. I mean, it's absolutely crazy. Here's what she wrote in to me, really to all of us, and I'd like you to hear this. It says, I wanted to update you on after the show responses and my progress. You may know this, but you have many amazing followers of The Last American Vagabond. I received many very kind and supportive responses. That's all you guys. I didn't make that happen. That's me saying that. Many amazing followers of Last American Vagabond. She received many very kind and supportive responses. A few had some vital information, which I followed up on. I will go into this later in the email. I had a few ask me for GoFundMes. That was touching, but she said she's not in need of funding. One listener wanted to send a monthly stipend for her Social Security. Think about that. Whoever that was, you're an amazing person. I emailed her right away to tell her I'm financially sound. I received responses from all over the United States and beyond. Greece, France, Canada, all the Last American Vagabond guys. That's amazing. You have such a great following for good reason, as your show is amazing. And like I told you on the phone, you are a beacon of hope. This will sound corny, but it bears repeating. Your voice and your message really kept me going through the height of the scamdemic, especially your sign off where you said, I love you all. Remember to question everything and stay vigilant. I really felt loved and supported in that I have always questioned everything. And there you were saying that very motto. Luckily, I was raised by a dad who empowered me and drilled into me to think for myself and to know my rights. I passed that to my kids. I'll tell you, though, in this climate culture, being a free thinker is counterculture and has made life difficult for them. They had trouble fitting in. Now, as they get older, it is clear this is an advantage, as no one in their age group can think for themselves, nor do they possess any common sense. But I digress. One listener gave me info, and she pursued me to join a Zoom meeting in which I was able to speak to an attorney. It's amazing. As a result, I have filed a case with the EEOC, and I'm waiting for an appointment in the Boston office. Guys, this is what it's all about. Once I have this meeting, I will get a lawyer who specializes in employment termination. I told myself after I received my rejection letter that Catholic Charities had messed with the wrong nurse and that I fight back. I can admit that it is an emotional process. I am so thankful for you. I'm thankful for the opportunity to tell my story and to offer support and strength to others. I have always thought differently, in quotes, branded by others as a conspiracy theorist, but until COVID-1984, I did not realize that there are many others who think differently. That's right. You're not alone, guys. You're not alone. This is good. Anyway, I could go on, but I will spare you. I hope this upcoming week is more relaxing for you. I hope you and your family have a wonderful Thanksgiving. In general, I hope you take care of yourself, get plenty of rest, eat healthy foods, and relax with a special someone and or hobbies. These are all important for life balance, and they will ensure that you continue to broadcast your show to us. I imagine your work is very stressful. Thank you for all you do, all the vital information you tirelessly research and cite for us. Happy Thanksgiving. Blessings. Melanie Congress. Very touching. Very touching. And I think what we really need to take away from this, guys, is that we are making a difference. You are making a difference. Those of you that reached out to her, that took it upon yourselves to find those in need and give them from what you need to help them, that is making a difference. And it just gets to me. I mean, that is everything we're doing right here. And it should make you feel good about yourself. It should make you realize that what you're doing, even just being here in the chat and letting other people know that you see it too, are changing people's lives. Powerful. Now, getting back into the show here, I want to start off, like I said, with some important right out of the gate stuff. And before I do that, actually, I did want to give one more shout out to a great host from the Irish Sentinel, Reality Bites Radio Live. I was just on, really great conversation. And just again, shows you that we are crossing borders, oceans. Great stuff. This is from Ireland. And just, you know, we are all in this fighting back against this. I was trying not to say the same thing that they say, but it is the truth. When you really think about it, what's funny is they do try to co-opt the things that actually, the same way they try to pretend they're fighting for sustainability when what they're doing is destroying sustainability. We are all in this together. Us versus the governments versus the power structures. That's what's happening right now. And that's why they try to co-opt that. Anyway, starting off with some important stuff here today, Denny Rancourt says something that kicks us off into the science that I thought was really important. He says, science provides a false test to establish that you died with COVID, in quotes, or if you have symptomless COVID. But science is unable to determine if you died from the injection. It detects things that are dubious and can't confirm the obvious. Progress against people. That's a scientist, right? This is Denny Rancourt, PhD, pointing out the absurd and many different angles you can do that from, right? So we're realizing that, oh, sure, we can know every angle of, I mean, it is a false test, or at the very least a test that has a ridiculously high false positive with the levels they're allowing people to use, which can somehow be able to find out every, you know, like he says, symptomless or with or without, but yet we can't find out any connection to the injection. All of it just unverified, yet simultaneously debunked. It's just childishly obvious, and we are all hopefully beginning to see it. Now, let's dive right in with what this stuff, what the science they're screaming at you to trust actually says while they don't look at it. This is really important stuff. Now, this is on, ahajournals.org. Abstract 10712. This is from November 8th, 2021. mRNA COVID vaccines dramatically increase endothelial inflammation markers. This is a really important finding. And this, it uses what's called a PULS cardiac test. And it shows you, using this test that they've been using for a really long time, that now and exactly when these mRNA injections began, it dramatically jumped up and consistently stays there now. Now, you can't pretend this is because COVID, even because that was happening during periods beforehand, 2020, where there were no injections and that wasn't happening. The moment the mRNA injections began, this spikes. And what does this mean? That this is increasing your body's inflammation markers, which lead to, you guessed it, things like thrombosis, cardiomyopathy, other vascular events that are leading to things like heart attacks and strokes and all the stuff we're talking about. But this won't be talked about on the evening news because they don't care about this stuff. They don't want to see this, or they don't know it's there. But this is going to be called fake news. And this is the kind of stuff that you see pulled and retracted by the editorial teams without even talking to the scientists, which is crazy. If that happens, I'll point it out. Not that it happens every time, but it has already happened. And even Dr. Malone has pointed out that that is unprecedented. Now, as it says, our group has been using the PLUS. Oh, that's interesting. I think that's actually a typo. I believe it's the PULS. I think this is just a, and you understand why. But anyway, the PULS cardiac test. a clinically validated measurement of multiple protein biomarkers, which generates a score predicting the five-year risk. So this is interesting, right? Because this actually predicts your risk over the next 5 years, which is very different than a lot of the other things we're talking about. And it says of a new acute coronary syndrome. So specifically an ACS, a new ACS with their acute coronary syndrome. The score is based on changes from the norm of multiple protein biomarkers, including IL-16, a pro-inflammatory cytokine. So they essentially have a base that they're watching, and the score is based on the changes up or down from that base. Now, it says elevation above the norm increases the PULS score, and below decreases it. Pretty simple. The score has been measured every 3 to 6 months in our patient population for 8 years now, long before COVID-19. It says recently, with the advent of the mRNA COVID-19 injections, which they just refer to as VAC, by Moderna and Pfizer, dramatic changes in the PULS score become apparent in most patients. I mean, this stuff is pretty damn definitive. And this is, it's just baffling to me that they will just ignore this stuff. This report summarizes these results. It says a total of 566 patients aged 28 to 97. So it shows you this, you know, the whole point of this is it's not just specifics. It's anybody for the most part. It says seen in a preventative cardiology practice. So again, total of 566 patients aged 28 to 97 seen in a preventative cardiology practice had a new PULS test drawn from 2 to 10 weeks following the second COVID shot and was compared then to the previous PULS score drawn 3 to 5 months previously pre-shot. So this is pretty damn definitive, right? So all these people had previous scores from before and all of them got it after they got the second shot. Now, it goes on to list the numbers. Baseline IL-16 increases from 35 equals slash minus 20. The point is right here what they say. And you can read these for yourself. Every one of them increases quite dramatically from this to that, right? Not to get into explaining what they're writing out there. It says these changes resulted in an increase of the PULS score, and this is the most important part, from 11% five-year ACS risk. Remember, that stands for acute coronary syndrome. To 25% five-year ACS risk. It goes from 11% to a 25% risk in the same time frame. All of them. At the time of this report, these changes persist for at least 2 to 5 months post second dose of the injection. Now you begin to see why we're seeing things happen like myocarditis and, well, more specifically, things like thrombosis, cardiomyopathy, and these things are happening after the period in which they say it makes sense. Well, he waited 15 minutes and so he left and now it doesn't count. Well, yeah, it really does, because for the next 5 years, you have an elevated risk of acute coronary syndrome. It couldn't be more clear. It says at the time of this report, again, they persisted 2.5 months. It says we conclude, the scientists conclude that the mRNA vaccinations dramatically increase inflammation on the endothelium and T-cell infiltration of cardiac muscle and may account for the observations of increased thrombosis, cardiomyopathy, and other vascular events following vaccination. So even these people are willing to put on paper that this is, of course you have to say may account because you didn't prove that that is literally what led to what we're seeing today. But even they're willing to write down this probably accounts for, I'm going to be specific what they said, this may account for all the things we're seeing right now that we can't explain. Yeah, you think? And this is only one of the many that we've combined around this topic to show you that they're all saying the same thing. An increase in the spike protein can be cytotoxic and can lead to all the same problems that we're pointing to, but we don't talk about that. This can lead to inflammation in your body and leads to all the same things we're talking about. We don't talk about that. mRNA itself has been shown to lead to these exact same problems in the very levels they're using it in. Nanoparticles and lipid nanoparticles, all of these things independently have been shown in peer-reviewed studies to lead to just about everything we're seeing today. And none of that's being considered. Now, those things, I guarantee, are playing a factor. But I think it's this in particular that we are seeing cause these kind of problems in conjunction, obviously, with the spike protein that literally causes that. I mean, it's almost like you're looking at something that's been designed to do this, designed to lower your immune system, or, you know, to do the very things that we've been talking about this whole time. Like a perfect storm that does all these things simultaneously from like 11 different directions. Or they're just wildly incompetent and tripped over backwards into the worst situation ever in history. Yeah, you go ahead and pick for yourself. But dramatically increase inflammation. That's the point. Are you going to see this on the news? Mainstream media, the corporate media, excuse me? I guarantee you won't. Unless it comes to a point to where they can undermine it in some way. Or, and the most important part about this is you can't lay this at the feet of COVID-19. You can't say, oh, well, COVID too, because that's what they'll keep doing. Even though there's obvious reasons that we'll get into in a moment to show you that COVID-19 and what the injections are causing don't even overlap, especially when you can see how many people are in different positions on either side of this. And you'll see what I mean as we go forward. Now, here, by the way, is also the cardiology advisor, just making sure people see this as well. So this is not some fringe concept, despite it being on a very important journal. November 18th, ACS risk biomarkers significantly increase after these injections. You won't hear this on the mainstream. Here is Alex Berenson. Now, by the way, just so you guys know, I actually just reached out to him to try to get him on the show. Despite the fact that we have obvious and ridiculously aggressive disagreements about cannabis, I reached out to him and I just said, look, hey, you know, I know we've butted heads on cannabis in the past. Didn't even bring up that he blocked me. Just said, hey, you know, look, now is the time that we pull aside all of these things. Like that, as much as I very strongly feel that that's an important thing to discuss, and I even asked him if he'd like to talk about it too, we could, but that stuff is irrelevant in regard to what we're all fighting right here. That's what we all need to be thinking about right now. Building bridges, even with people. I mean, look, even if you out there may think other people, certain people may be, you know, shills that aren't, you know, whatever. At the end of the day, if we can get people seeing what we're talking about and cross these, it's about building bridges and fighting this as much as possible together. So hopefully he'll take my invitation and we can talk about COVID stuff and maybe cannabis if he wants to get into it. I'll be cordial. I'll be amicable. Nonetheless, I do think, as I always say, that he's doing a great job when it comes to the COVID-19 information. I've never faltered on that. And we should give that credit where credit is due. I still think the cannabis information is incredibly archaic, but that's another topic. But this great article he puts out there, vaccinated English adults under 60 are dying at twice the rate of unvaccinated people the same age. Now, you and Ash, I'll give even more credit on top of that, that the first place that I actually got wind of the UK reports that were showing that breakdown was from Alex as well, from a while ago. And so since then, we have 100% been continuing to show you that. And it's very clear, even when considering the points people would make, well, you know, you're not taking into consideration how many are in each category and the percentages they're in. Well, I mean, I was, but that wasn't the same point. The point is simply to show you that if you look at the data they're presenting, there's no way it can jive with their narrative. It just doesn't. You can't continue to pretend that hospitalization and death after the after being injected is super, super rare when the majority of them in their categories are the people vaccinated, injected. Simple as that. Even if it ends up, if you break it down, making it look like the unvaccinated are in higher risk, that's a separate conversation. I disagree with that again, but pointing it out like this is just undeniable. And you'll see what I mean as you look at the graph. For those on the podcast, it's undeniable. And this is the data. And please, please question this and look it up for yourself, especially those of you that think this is fake news. Please look it up because you'll quickly find out that this is absolutely accurate. It says, and may have been for 6 months. Oh, it says, that's weird. The chart may seem unbelievable, but it's correct. And have been for 6 months. Oh, I see what he's saying. I'm wondering why I highlighted that halfway through. Basically, for the last 6 months, the data has been very clear, which again, you've been seeing from my show as well. This chart may seem unbelievable or impossible, but it's correct based on weekly data from the British government. The brown line represents weekly deaths from all causes of vaccinated people under 10 and to 59, or excuse me, age 10 to 59 per 100,000 people. The blue line represents weekly deaths from all causes of unvaccinated people per 100,000 in the same age range. For those in the podcast, the orange, the brown line is just way high. It's up to 3 to 3.5, while the blue line is dancing between 2 below 1.5. So there's no denying this. Now, you could argue that maybe there's another reason. Sure. That's always what people like us are trying to say. Yes, sure, there could be. But how about we realize that they're not even asking the question? That's the main point. As he says, I have checked the underlying data set myself, and this graph is correct. Vaccinated people under 60 are twice as likely to die as unvaccinated people. And overall deaths in Britain are running well above normal. All of that is true. I've just went over this in my last show. I don't know how to explain this other than vaccine-caused mortality. And I like that he says that. And this is the point. Neither myself nor Alex or most anybody who's being honest is trying to say, this proves this or that. No, we're simply pointing out that there's an obvious question that needs to be asked here. And it clearly points in the direction of what we are theorizing, what we're discussing, what other data has clearly pointed to as well. And nobody's asking that question. In fact, they're dismissing it, ignoring it. That's what we're trying to show. That's important. Now, since we, I might as well just grab this real quick. Where's the last one? 46. Perfect. I might as well show you the exact point. Here's what he references this link. Deaths by vaccination status, specifically England. And that's what he's pulling from right there. But remember, in this report, the last one we have anyway, week 46 from the UK Health Security Agency. Sounds like Alex Jones when I said that. It says right here, under specifically deaths for, where we had deaths right here, within 28 days. I mean, there's no denying what you're looking at here. Again, just taking over 80 or even just over 60. Look at the data. You have dramatically, it's a 1,000 out of a total of 1,751 total deaths in the over 80 category from weeks 42 to 45, only 181 of them were not injected. 1,519 were fully injected. It's the same for category 60 to 69, 70 to 79. So there you are. There's no misunderstanding that. So the point is, even if you just want to take that one category, he's 100% right. Adults under 60 are dying at twice the rate of unvaccinated people. It's just crazy to me, guys. It's absolutely crazy that people are ignoring this information. Please check it for yourself and please do the research, because you'll be hopefully shocked to realize that we haven't been lying to you this entire time. Now, here's another one that I wanted to go through that pretty much explains why this is happening. For those that are asking, not why, but how. Because why is really the wrong question. I mean, it matters very much so, but we often never get the why. Right? We never fully get it. We have theories and conversations, but if we can prove that they're lying, the why of it ultimately is a secondary point, right? So we know as a matter of fact that this is happening. You could argue it's incompetence, but I don't know why that's any better. But this is what this person labels it as, a lesson in statistical wizardry. Good way to put that. Now, this is about recent CDC data. And it's exactly the kind of thing that he's pointing out right here that we've been pointing out in regard to how they're lying about what they're seeing, how their studies will actually find things. The data will show things, then their conclusion says the opposite. So the media just looks at the conclusion and goes, well, that's what they say. But when you read the data, it says, well, that's not even remotely what they're finding. And people have missed that. But a lot of people are beginning to point it out. And as it says, on October 29th, 2021, the CDC released a study through which it was proclaimed that, and you remember this, we covered it the moment it came out. They proclaimed that fully vaccinated persons enjoyed 5.49 times greater protection from COVID than persons who enjoyed natural immunity due to recovery from previous COVID infection, right? We laughed at this together because it was ridiculous. And now that's been backed up by a lot of heavy hitters out there. You know, scientists, PhDs that are going through this and laughing at how obviously willfully deceptive their article was. And this will only make that even more clear. They lied to you here. The study concludes that, quote, all eligible persons should be vaccinated against COVID as soon as possible, including unvaccinated persons previously infected, despite the fact that all the peer-reviewed science shows you that that's very dangerous, but who cares? It says, however, if we dissect and analyze the elements of the study upon which the claim of infected protection for fully vaccinated persons is based, we find glaring discrepancies between the bold claims made by the CDC and the actual findings. Exactly what seems to happen every time. Now, I think I can skip this part. Most of this is important. This whole article is fantastic. The goal of the study was to determine who enjoys greater protection, right? Fully injected or people who recover after no infection. To implement the study, hospitalized patients with COVID-like symptoms, which is ridiculous, by the way, why that would be the way to start. And obviously it's because it's easy to manipulate. It shouldn't be like, because obviously that could be flu, that could be pneumonia, that could be any number of other things. But they were studied in the locations they did. We went over all this and last time we covered it. It was, you know, not as large as it should have been, in my opinion. A total of all these hospitals were identified using a series of factors and criteria. The group of 201,000 patients was narrowed down to a pool of 7,348. Now, every time studies like this that's how they go. But when you have a group like the CDC that is willful, has been shown to be dishonest, you need to ask yourself, and that's what he gets into, what was the criteria by which you whittled that down to 7,000? Who did you get rid of and why? Here's the results. According to CDC data related to the study, of these 7,348 hospitalized patients, 6,328 had been fully injected, while 1,020 had been not injected. Now, this is the point they made when I read this to you. What do you think you're going to find when you very clearly, like if you have it slanted in one very obvious direction, that doesn't seem like, if it's not 50-50, you can play with that quite aggressively. And that's one of the points he makes here. But it says also of these 7,348 patients, a total of 413 actually tested positive for COVID. See how it keeps whittling down. Of these 413 patients who tested positive for COVID with a PCR test that could be false positives, 324 of them have been fully injected, while 89 were unvaccinated but enjoyed natural immunity. But doesn't this continue to show you that it's all on the side of the injected, even in their own study? So remember, they started with 200,000 people, and we've whittled this down to all of them being potentially infected, 324 of them being fully injected, while 89 not, and that's most of them being on the side of the in the injected. It's just, it's funny in a macabre way. Now, the study results by age. The CDC also shared data breakdowns according to age. According to these breakdowns by age, 7,348 hospitalized patients, 5,367 were over the age of 65. Of those 5,367 hospitalized patients over the age of 65, 4,903 of them were fully injected, while 464 of them were not injected, but enjoyed natural immunity. Also, of these 5,367 hospitalized patients over the age of 65, 293 tested positive for COVID. Of those 293 who tested positive for COVID, 253 were fully injected, while 40 were uninjected. It's just, it's plain on its face. Study results with time restriction removed. And this is the important part. This is the most important of the discussion. They laid a time restriction for no real discernible reason, or really based on what they're trying to fit it to. This is what COVID applies to, which has clearly been shown not to be the case. And when you remove that time, suddenly the real picture is shown. Isn't that funny? The CDC provided another important data breakdown in determining that fully vaccinated persons enjoyed 5.49 times greater protection from COVID. I'm going to go ahead and just say, I'm going to stop trying to switch back and forth because it's driving me absolutely crazy. You all know my belief this is not a vaccine and so on, but I'm just going to stop because it's making myself go crazy. In determining that fully vaccinated persons enjoyed 5.49 times greater protection from COVID than their unvaccinated counterparts who enjoyed natural immunity, the CDC applied a time restriction. This part of the analysis only included patients whose full vaccination or previous infection had occurred 90 to 179 days earlier. When we removed this time restriction, we're left with an interesting result. When the 90 to 179 day time restrictions removed, the original pool of 7,348 patients is expanded suddenly to 20,482 patients. Of these 20,482 hospitalized patients, 18,397 were fully vaccinated, while 2,085 were unvaccinated. Look at that, but enjoyed natural immunity. Also, of the 20,482 hospitalized patients, 672 of them tested positive for COVID. Of these 672 patients who tested positive for COVID, shocker, 542 of them were fully vaccinated, while 130 were unvaccinated. Removing the 90 to 179 day time restriction is an interesting and useful exercise because viruses and organisms don't follow calendars and stringent time constraints. Yeah, that's silly that they would apply an arbitrary time constraint to something that doesn't, and they know that. Assessing the data in a way that is free of time restrictions may allow us to predict and gauge how a virus and pathogen may behave and mutate in the real world, far removed from their controlled settings, which aren't very controlled. Now, it says the next item illustrates more succinctly than any other, the astonishing contrast between the CDC's bold claims regarding vaccine protection and the actual study results. Let me do this so I can highlight this part. A grave concern throughout the course of the COVID pandemic has been the emergence of variants. A viral variant is a mutated form of the original virus that has genetically evolved in order to escape or evade functions of immunity. Exactly. Right? Not the way they want you to think. That the normal process makes it happen all of a sudden because you're all unvaccinated. No, it's because they've escaped or evaded functions of immunity that are being applied to it with something new like the injection on the part of the host. Through, and by the way, all of the peer-reviewed studies before all this make that very clear, but COVID clown world changes everything. Through 2021, public health officials grew increasingly concerned about what came to be known as the Delta variant. Or maybe you can argue the injection that is being called Delta variant. As part of their study, the CDC provided a breakdown based on timeframes aligned with Delta variant predominance. According to this breakdown, based on Delta variant predominance, of the 7,348 hospitalized patients, 5,402 were hospitalized between June and September 2021. The timeframe aligned with Delta predominance. Of the 5,402 patients hospitalized during Delta predominance, 5,213 of them fully vaccinated. Of the total of 325 patients who tested positive during that time period, 306 fully vaccinated. This is in the CDC study where they find like the literal opposite. Why did CDC claims contradict the actual data? In all of these different breakdowns, it is evident that fully vaccinated patients were hospitalized and infected at higher rates than their unvaccinated counterparts who enjoyed natural immunity. But if this is the case, how did the CDC determine that fully vaccinated patients enjoyed 5.49 times greater protection from COVID than unvaccinated counterparts who enjoyed natural immunity? Person says, well, I'm not really sure, but I suspect it has a lot to do with terms such as adjusted odds ratio, confidence interval, standardized mean, proportion difference, and sociodemographic characteristics. Or maybe they got their hands on the 1950s classic How to Lie with Statistics. Either way, guys, this is the why of it. The how is very clear. They manipulated this. They lied about what this is showing, and they slanted it in a way and, you know, put arbitrary constraints on it that made it go in the direction that they wanted you to see. In reviewing, oh, and don't forget, the HHS, the BMJ, even the WHO have all called the CDC out for doing this before COVID started, but now it all disappeared. Even some of them have been removed from the website, but don't worry, I've got them archived. In reviewing all of these various CDC charts and statistics, it is obvious that there was a concerted effort on the part of both the CDC and multiple media outlets to report the findings that fully vaccinated persons enjoyed more robust protection from COVID than their unvaccinated counterparts, even though such a finding was not and is not based in reality, truth, or fact. In the lengthy text of the study itself, it was acknowledged that there were many limitations in terms of how the study was designed and conducted. This is one key concern. Was to do with generalizability, whether the study's findings could be applied to the general population. Gee, doesn't that seem relevant? When the CDC and the media outlets boldly proclaimed how full vaccination offers almost six times greater protection, of course they failed to mention any of the concerns or limitations in the study, because that's good journalism, isn't it? These people are pathetic. The data indicate that natural immunity is more protective than vaccination, even though they literally said the opposite. All through the study, and particularly when time restrictions are removed, of course, and when time frames are adjusted to align with Delta variant predominance, it is clearly shown that patients with natural immunity enjoyed much more robust, durable, and long-lasting protection from COVID than their fully vaccinated counterparts. Where have you heard that before? Where have you seen this? In every single show I've done about natural immunity. You know why? Because every single study is saying that. All of them. The Lancet, Science, Science Mag, Journal of Infection, Journal of, I could list another 14 of them off. All of them say this, and I've shown you all on the show. How can we not recognize a concerted effort to hide this, a criminal act? In delving into the nuances of this published report, it is evident that the CDC knowingly reported results in a manipulative manner in order to serve some ulterior motive or agenda. I mean, it's impossible to come away from that seeing it any other way. In conclusion, COVID-19 has caused devastating loss of life and hindered the normal functions. You know, this is the same kind of thing. I don't agree with that. I just don't. I argue that we don't know. And I argue that it's very likely, most obviously based on the evidence, that this was caused because of their actions and their manipulations around it. As Denny Rancourt pointed out, there was a huge pneumonia epidemic that was just shoved into this and flu disappeared. And there's a million reasons why you can see that this is not what it looks like. But it says any attempt to devote resources or conduct studies for the purpose of more fully understanding how vaccines work and how effective they might be in protecting vulnerable populations should be welcomed and applauded. I disagree with that only because these people doing them, by and large, or really conducting this most of these locations, are to some level manipulatable. That's why we should be looking at people like James Lyons Weiler and IPAC doing peer-reviewed science without the institutions in the way. However, it says the claims made by the CDC as a result of this study that fully vaccinated patients enjoyed almost six times greater protection was blatantly and categorically absurd, disingenuous, unethical, dishonest, and contrary to the public good. Exactly what we've been telling you and exactly what you can verify for yourself. And this is the, one of the most important points that I've been trying to drive home since the very beginning of this. And I'm going to play the video yet again today, a short one, because this is something that people need to digest, especially if you have yet to really pick up how important this is. This is a study from February 2021, February of this year, that is calling this out. And most people don't even realize how important this is. Outcome reporting bias in COVID-19 mRNA vaccine clinical trials. You know how many different angles those clinical trials are being shown to be manipulated, false, deceptive, fraudulent? A lot. I mean, what more do you really need other than the BMJ whistleblower from Pfizer's trial that is showing you with evidence that they lied, falsified data? It's amazing that they could ignore something like that. But it says relative risk reduction and absolute risk reduction measures in the evaluation of clinical trial data are poorly understood by health professionals, and the public. You realize what that said? Not just you, but the doctors. The nurses, they don't know this stuff because this is specifics. It's only been in this weird situation we found ourselves in which plenty of average people, or even just doctors who it's not their specialty, are learning all sorts of words and terms and understanding things they've never needed to before. There's plenty of doctors out there that are very, very smart doctors that have no idea about certain things that are outside of their scope. So what they're saying is this is an important topic that's been used to manipulate people that even health professionals don't understand. The absence of reported absolute risk reduction in COVID-19 vaccine clinical trials can lead to outcome reporting bias that affects the interpretation of vaccine efficacy. Now, of course, it can lead to that. And I think it was intentionally used and has been intentionally misreported. But that, of course, they can't say that because they can't prove that. But it can lead to, you know, what they're framing as just accidental misreporting. Or bias specifically, which does seem to suggest some sort of intention. But it also makes sure you understand that what it says here is the evaluation of clinical trial data are poorly understood. Oh, here, this part. The absence of reported absolute risk reduction in the trials. So what they're saying here is not this that it's being misreported, that this is the trial data they're choosing with the okay of Fauci and the institutions and the NIH and the U.S. government and everybody else involved, because they're clearly not pointing it out, to use that misinterpretation on intentionally what that is known to be confusing and not accurate. So why are they allowing that in the clinical trials? It's a good question. But it's not really when you understand that it's to deceive you. It's very clear. Now it says, based on data reported by the manufacturer for Pfizer and for Moderna, this critical appraisal shows relative risk reduction is at 90, or the, excuse me, the first one's just Pfizer, 95.1%. Relative risk reduction. So that's what they're screaming at, 95%. And the average person out there thinks, hey, I'm protected 95%. It reduces this 95%. It stops death 95%. None of that is true, not even remotely. Absolute risk reduction for Pfizer, 0.7%. 0.7. This is on the NIH National Library of Medicine. Okay, so it's telling you 0.7 is your absolute risk reduction. It reduces your current risk by 0.7%. If you don't understand that, I'll play the video next and it'll explain it very clearly. For the Moderna injection, the appraisal showed relative risk reduction of 94.1%. So what's funny is it actually showed a relative risk reduction of lower, but it says absolute risk reduction, 1.1%. So isn't that strange how the relative is lower compared to the relative of Pfizer, yet somehow the absolute risk reduction is bigger, is more for Moderna. Either way, 1.1%. If they gave you this shot that came with an increased risk of myocarditis for everybody, and they said, oh, it will reduce your risk, which is, by the way, already very, very low for you, for most of you, by only 1%, would you be like, yeah, bring it on. Bring on that thing that increases my risk of something that can increase my mortality by 50% in the next 10 years. Sounds great. Myocarditis is what I'm talking about. Unreported absolute risk reduction, they find, measures of 0.7 and 1.1% for Pfizer and Moderna, respectively, are very much lower than the reported relative risk reduction measures. Reporting absolute risk reduction measures is essential to prevent outcome reporting bias and evaluation of COVID vaccine efficacy. They said this back in February. Oh, it's essential, is it? NIH, National Library of Medicine? Well, gee, I wonder why Fauci doesn't know that. I wonder why they don't care. So you can find this. Trust the science, but we'll ignore what they said is absolutely essential for doing exactly what you're doing. If you can't see how the game is being played, you're choosing not to see this stuff. How is it possible that they can find that it's absolutely essential, or in December 2020, they can find a significant and specific risk of antibody-dependent enhancement from these injections, and it must be reported, and none of these things happen? It's quite clear what's happening. They're not even entertaining the new scientific research. They're ignoring it. Now, here's the video that I want you to watch. As I said, it's monumentally important that we understand the deception that's being used regarding the claim of 95% efficacy or some variation therein. It's an illusion. They knowingly continue to use relative risk reduction instead of absolute risk reduction. The more you know. Very, very important. Let me see if I actually have the download still. I'll play that one instead so you'll hear it better. I thought I did. Maybe not. All right, so this is the tweet. Better to share anyway, because you guys can share it easier than having the downloadable link. All right, we'll play it from right here. All right.
And you have the right to know the potential benefit of any intervention. For example, Pfizer reported that its vaccine shows a 95% efficacy. That sounds like it protects you 95% of the time, right? But that's not actually what that number means. That 95% refers to the relative risk reduction, but it doesn't tell you how much your overall risk is reduced by vaccination. For that, we need absolute risk reduction. In the Pfizer trial, 8 out of 18,198 people who were given the vaccine developed COVID-19. In the unvaccinated placebo group, 162 people got it, which means that even without the vaccine, the risk of contracting COVID-19 was extremely low at 0.88%, which the vaccine then reduced to 0.04%. So the net benefit, or the absolute risk reduction that you're being offered with a Pfizer vaccine, is 0.84%. That 95% number, that refers to the relative difference between 0.88 and 0.04%. That's what they call 95% relative risk reduction. And relative risk reduction is well known to be a misleading number, which is why the FDA recommends using absolute risk reduction instead, which begs the question, how many people would have chosen to take the COVID-19 vaccines had they understood that they offered less than 1% benefit?
It's a great question. I would argue quite a bit less. This is why they're lying. Willfully lying. Willfully deceiving, rather, in every possible angle. From every possible angle. I mean, it just couldn't be more clear. And by the way, it's not, even though this is obvious and there's been plenty of discussion about it, there's even been studies that look up, you know, the COVID elephant in the room. That was written months ago, talking about this exact thing that they're knowingly keeping from your view. It's just, people just don't want to look at this. I think largely it's people that are aggressively stuck in their direction because they don't want to realize they made a mistake. But that doesn't mean that we are not reaching people. I know it can feel insurmountable sometimes. We are not at some deadlock where people have just chosen a side. I mean, that is what's happening, but it doesn't mean we can't reach these people. Every single day, I mean, literally, I get emails, phone calls, people reaching out going, you saved this, or you made me find this, or whatever it is, that this content or other people's content allowed them to see through the deception. And, you know, week ago, they were completely in lockstep with this, and they finally woke up to it. Every day that's happening. If it can happen for them, it can happen for anybody. Believe it. And at the very end of it, it comes down to the fact that, as I've always said, guys, if you were given a choice, if you were shown that we were not going to succeed, there was just absolutely no way that we could possibly do it, would you just give up today? I'd like to believe no. I'd like to believe that you're here because that's not in you. That you would never do that. That even knowing that that wouldn't be the case, well, you know what? Then I'm going to fight to the end to make every difference I can to make it a little bit better for those that are stuck with what happens. Because that's who we are. Don't give up. Because trust me, I know it can feel that way. And I know it can get to you. It gets to me. It gets to everybody. But that's what we're here for. That's what the community is here for. That's what the chat is here for. It's for people to find comfort in the reality or the what's the right word for it? The community that we're creating in the reality, that we see it, even though it's dangerous. And even though we have problems that are happening, like we need to find that community and realize that we are the majority every day. Going to the next study, this is, it speaks to the larger illusion, or rather the larger, again, this is malicious. This kind of a reality, this kind of study, or this kind of situation in regard to vitamin D's we're going to talk about next, it's undeniable how we can go from a time when that was obvious, a foregone conclusion. Again, here's a study from 2012 from the NIH, or actually, again, posted on the Library of Medicine, regardless, a peer-reviewed study from 2012, finding, guess what, that vitamin D is exactly what we need for our immune system, right? This is all there. They knew this was here. We'll go to that in a second. But coming into this situation where it's a foregone conclusion that we all know that vitamin D, vitamin C, these are basics. That's why things like airborne and these different things exist, because we all know that those have effects, right? We all know it. Even Fauci talked about this in the beginning, saying he would do vitamin D. But then somewhere along this COVID clown world, when I think they clearly realized that vitamin D at high levels actually brought your mortality down to zero, that they said, well, vitamin D is fake news. And that just speaks to the level of manipulation that you can tell somebody on a dime that, oh, that vitamin D that you're probably currently giving your children is not, no, that's fake news. It's dangerous, in fact. Well, here's a study from October 2021 that is telling you not only that vitamin D is obviously, as we've always known, one of the best things that you can continue to do for your body, regardless of whether it's for COVID-19, the cold, the flu, or just because you want to be healthy. It improves your immune system, which then helps you fight off everything. So even if you want to market it for COVID-19, that is still valid, despite their bleeding about how it's not. This finds that not only that, it brings your mortality down to potentially zero if done beforehand and if done to high levels. And this is exactly why they would never want you to see this, because if you can just take high levels of vitamin D and ignore everything else in regard to their injections and their therapeutics and all the things they're doing going forward, well, that doesn't work for them, does it? And this is likely also why they kept this down, because had this come out during the beginning, they wouldn't have been able to logically, legally, even though that doesn't matter to them, emergency authorize an injection that is still clearly dangerous and not investigated properly, and on and on and on. As it says, COVID-19 mortality risk correlates inversely with vitamin D3 status. D3 is the important one. And a mortality rate close to zero could theoretically be achieved at 50 milliliters D3. Results of a systematic review and meta-analysis. So that's important. So this isn't just new findings. This is grabbing all the available information that they list off for you and finding that it comes to a clear conclusion, which continues to show you more than just a new study, that they've been ignoring it the entire time. They've been willfully ignoring what the body of scientific research actually shows you about vitamin D. Now, again, is that called trusting the science when you ignore what the body that's currently there continues to point to? No, you're ignoring all of that. They're ignoring all of that. It's not like there's some other body of data over here that says the opposite. That's not happening. They're just blatantly ignoring this while then literally arguing the opposite. Now, some of them know they're lying. Some of them just parrot what the CDC tells them while the CDC knows they're lying, or the FDA or the US government. Because here's what it finds. On the background, first of all, much research shows, I love how it starts that way. So we're at a point right now where they're going, no, you can't do that. Oh, it's illegal. Department of Justice says it's illegal to do that. We'll get to that in a second. But their first sentence says, much research shows that blood calcidiol or D3 levels correlate strongly with SARS-CoV-2 infection severity. Much research, right? It all shows that. And yet we're still trying to figure it out. We don't know for sure. Isn't that funny? There is open discussion regarding whether low D3 is caused by the infection or if deficiency negatively affects immune defense. The aim of this study was to collect further evidence on this topic. Interesting. It says the two independent data sets showed a negative Pearson correlation of D3 levels and mortality risk. Regression suggested a theoretical point of zero mortality at approximately 50 milligram D3. Possibly zero. Nothing else can boast that. Nothing. Not the injection, not their therapeutics, nothing. So if this is theoretically zero, wouldn't you be like, stop everything? This is what we should be investigating with all of our resources to find out if that's true, because we could bring them down to zero tomorrow. Well, that's not happening, is it? I wonder why. You know why. Conclusions. The data sets provide strong evidence that low D3 is a predicator rather than just a side effect, which is what they were trying to argue, of the injection. This is how they keep playing this game. They go, no, that's just because they brought your D3 levels down because you got injected. And by the way, the ones that argued that said it because they just wanted that to be the argument. Now the science that they did around it, the research, shows you that's not true. Very clearly. It's actually a predicator. So the point is, your low D3 levels are why you got sick, or at least it led to that being possible. Despite ongoing vaccinations, they recommend raising your D3 levels to prevent or mitigate new outbreaks due to escape mutations or decreasing antibody activity. Here's a study from 2012, immune system, vitamin D. It is now clear that vitamin D has important roles in addition to its classic effects on calcium and bone homeostasis. As the vitamin D receptor is expressed on immune cells, B cells, T cells, antigen-presenting cells, and these immunologic cells are all capable of synthesizing the active vitamin D. Vitamin D can modulate the innate and adaptive immune responses. Right. Deficiency in vitamin D is associated with increased autoimmunity as well as an increased susceptibility to infection. Right there. It could not be more clear. Deficiency in vitamin D is associated with increased risk of infection. So then ask yourself why, during this biggest pandemic in a century, we're told, that they would come out and say, no, your court orders that you have to stop selling vitamin D products as treatments for this or other diseases. How do you rectify those two things? How do you make sense of that? How can we stare at this study that literally says this is specifically tied to susceptibility to infection? And then when they're trying to sell it to fight infection or diseases or COVID, which all lines up in the same direction, they go, nope, stop, illegal. It's now literally illegal. It's because there's criminal activity going on and they're playing this game. This is why right now the pretending that suddenly natural immunity is a conspiracy theory. I mean, again, the word insane or crazy or these kind of things always come to mind, because this is schizophrenic. There's no explaining how you can look at these two things and walk away thinking that they both simultaneously make sense. The reality is that I think most of us do see this. And the only people that are towing this line are the desperate ones, not the majority. And they keep pointing at the people they want you to see as the majority. And where else do we get to see examples of the majority? The mainstream are the only people even capable of setting what we think as the majority. They're lying to you right now. And speaking of other lies, I found Steve Kirsch's newsletter recently very interesting, because this is exactly what I think too. He says Biden is highly likely vaccine injured. Newsom is definitely vaccine injured. Now, I know a lot of people are of the mindset, and it's, this is his opinion, by the way, which he makes clear, of the mindset that these people are, you know, would never get it because they know the inside secret and they would get the saline and, you know, what they're trying to trick. I have continued to say that I do not think these people are what we think that they are. Biden or the rest of them, these are puppets, guys. These politicians are not the people pulling the strings. You really believe that people like Nancy Pelosi, Maxine Waters, Newsom, Biden, or Trump, or anybody else on either side are actually, I mean, the reason I list off them is because they just seem like the most obvious crazy examples to me today. You know, someone like Graham, for example, is just crazy to me, in my opinion. But if you really believe they're the people pulling the strings, I mean, that's laughable. So what I think is what he's talking about as well is that these people did get the injection for whatever reason around it, whether they believed it or they were told they should or whatever you think. I do think this is happening. Peripheral neuropathy is extremely common after vaccination. Apparently, an estimated 80% of vaccine injured have it. Not all people get injected, you understand, but 80% of people who get vaccine injuries apparently have peripheral neuropathy, which is crazy. I'll read you what that is in a second. And the timing lines up perfectly. His doctors have ruled out every other cause. So here, just to make it very clear, this is on, I'll refresh it and show you the top. It says, this exam did, however, reveal a mild peripheral neuropathy in both feet. This is the White House document about Biden's health. Physician to the president. This is November 19th. Okay. And they found peripheral neuropathy in both feet in Biden, which I just showed you. Okay, so keeping that in mind, And of course, they all say Biden fit for the job, right? That's what all the media, even Fox and everybody else, they all said the same thing. But it says, my initial determination is that it appears that Biden's medical problems that caused him to finally get a medical checkup were highly likely to be caused by his recent vaccine booster shot. He says that because, one, all the evidence we are presently aware of fits that hypothesis without exception. And I agree with that. Two, there isn't any evidence supporting a more likely alternative hypothesis. Now, he says, here are some of the things we know about Biden. Number one, problems started after his very first injection. The gait issues, remember? And they even list that off in this as well, how he's had these issues. And it to a T follows right after he got the injection. Gait meaning the way he walks. Problems, number two, problems got a lot worse after his recent booster, which is exactly what we expect. Peripheral neuropathy in his feet, which is what they just told you he has. It was so bad that he had to go in for a physical, which he has avoided until now. Three, he got his booster September 27th. He got the real shot. This is what he thinks, and I agree, not the saline solution. Biden actually believes the vaccine works and didn't get the saline. Now, I don't know whether that's but whatever the reasoning around it is, I do believe he probably got the real thing. I do. But one quick note on the side is in regard to the saline discussion. Somebody pointed this out to me in a comment. Now, I was discussing very quickly the concept of the meningitis vaccine being used as a saline shot. That 100% happened. But I stopped following that back a while ago. And I was reiterating that concept recently. But what somebody pointed out to me, and again, this is unconfirmed, so please go out there and do your due diligence on this. They were saying that apparently the high wire made some stink about this in a lawsuit, and they were forced to start using saline. I don't know if that's true or not. Regardless, I don't know whether or not they're currently using saline or other vaccines, but I do know that they did in the beginning, and that very clearly has implications for the results they found. But on top of that, it doesn't make sense even remotely to use another vaccine that has its own side effects as a placebo. That's crazy. So just know that did happen. Whether or not they stopped it, and why that wasn't a huge story is something for us to look into later. But I didn't get time to do it. I will come back to that. And by the way, I will say circle back to it to all you guys, everyone's irritation. I've been saying circle back long before Pasky Campbell started saying that. So it's frustrating that I'm trying to like not say things because she said them. Screw her. I'm going to say what I would say because it's a common saying. But we will come back to that later, hopefully, and dig into that more. But now that I saw saline, I wanted to point that out. Going forward, number four. His symptoms due to the booster probably started in early November and then got progressively worse, prompting him to finally have to agree to get an exam. Now, another point, by the way, off the top of my head, for all those that think that the plan is to get Kamala Harris in, well, there you go. There could be an exact reason why that was the way it went. Just a thought. Number five, his physical was on November 19th. Number six, the doctors basically ruled out every possible cause of peripheral neuropathy. Of course, they would never admit that the vaccine caused it. It wasn't even investigated as a possible cause, despite the statistics on how common it is following vaccination. As anyone who has ever been in a vaccine support group, injured support group, would attest. That's pretty stunning. The doctors didn't even consider it. But we know that's why it's going. Or excuse me, how it's going. These doctors aren't even allowed to consider these possibilities, despite how very obvious it is, at the very least, a possibility. Now, it goes on to say a lot of people are surprised Biden got the real thing, in his opinion, based on what he's saying is happening. He says he's not at all. Most people are completely clueless about vaccine safety issues, including doctors. And on top of that, I argue that these people are the clueless ones. You think the Bidens of the world are the ones leading everything and making decisions? Come on, we need to see clearly through that today. Like most people, he's never done a Veyer's query and listens to what the CDC says instead of what the data says. Exactly what they've already admitted. I forget her name now, the black lady who was doing the briefing. It was caught when they said, how do you know for sure it's a Delta variant? And she looked at them like they were stupid. Like, what do you mean? What kind of question is that? Because the CDC told us. That was her actual answer, paraphrasing. So the White House doesn't do their due diligence. The CDC tells them things and they regurgitate it. As you should know by now. So too does Biden. Now, finally, to be perfectly clear, he says, I am only claiming that he thinks this is most likely the explanation. We probably will never know for sure. And I agree with that. Now, Newsom is interesting. Now, this is important. I almost wanted to put this in the headline today because of what he says here, but I haven't confirmed this. And on top of that, the rest of this seems more important to me, but this is a big deal. He says Newsom is 100% vaccine injured with Guillain-Barré syndrome. As for California Governor Newsom, he says, I have now multiple sources. Steve Kirsch says he has multiple sources that definitively confirm that Gavin Newsom has Guillain-Barré syndrome. I originally wrote that he had Guillain-Barré, changed it to Bell's palsy after his appearance on TV, but he now has new information, he says, from multiple trusted sources that he trusts, that that Gavin Newsom has Guillain-Barré syndrome and additional video evidence that apparently he'll be coming out with shortly. So if you see that first, send it to me. I'll be keeping an eye out for it. Newsom, and by the way, that's exactly what I thought the very first time the story came out. Newsom is banking on the get better option, and he thinks he can cover his tracks by basically waiting it out. But he says he offered him, this is interesting. Steve Kirch apparently reached out to Gavin Newsom, offered him unlimited amounts of money just to give him a paper with the doctors he consulted with after his booster. Now he says, if he's telling the truth, that this is not what that we're thinking it is, he could essentially collect $100 million for just handing him a blank piece of paper, right? But the offer was ignored. Now that doesn't prove anything, but why wouldn't he just be like, well, here's a blank sheet, give me money, right? It says something to it, because we'll find out eventually, and who knows? Bottom line is who would turn down $100 million for a blank piece of paper? Someone who is lying to the public about their vaccine injury. Certainly possible. I do think that's what we're having. I mean, we've already seen other people in positions of power have vaccine injuries. Now, this is one of the most important ones on top of that, showing you how even The Lancet is trying to get people to recognize that this vaccine of the pandemic of the pandemic of the vaccinated they keep screaming about, or excuse me, pandemic of the unvaccinated as they keep screaming about, is not justified at all. And we know that because you've been watching the show and you've been paying attention. But what's crazy is that this is something that The Lancet is saying, and yet it's still happening. And I don't say The Lancet like that for any other reason than that's what they tell you to listen to. And here they are saying this, and it still continues. Nothing is sacred in their narrative. It's just about keeping the narrative going and ignoring anything that challenges that. November 20th, this was yesterday, or 2 days ago. It says, in the USA and Germany, and there's some things in here I don't agree with, high-level officials have used the term pandemic of the unvaccinated, excuse me, suggesting the people who have been vaccinated are not relevant in the epidemiology of COVID-19. Officials' use of this phrase might have encouraged one scientist to claim that, quote, the unvaccinated threaten the vaccinated for COVID-19. But this view is far too simple. And the point is not accurate. So the very claim that we're talking about here that has become the current narrative that by simply being unvaccinated, you are threatening those that are vaccinated is false. And you'll see more as we go through just the abstract here that this is exactly what they're saying. And yet they keep doing it. Even doctors and scientists do it. It says there is increasing evidence that vaccinated individuals continue to have a relevant role in transmission. More than that, by the way. And I'll get to that again in a couple of points here, but they list off the Massachusetts example, which, funny enough, the entirety of the Western media said, fake news, you're so dumb, you don't even understand how that works. That's not what really happened, and whatever they tried to say around it. Well, guess what? CNN, even Fox, the rest of them that tried to gaslight us around the story, you're not smarter than Lancet, or at least that's what you tell everybody, that the Lancet's who we're supposed to trust, right? No, you shouldn't be trusting anything. You should be doing your due diligence, coming to your own conclusions about the research in front of you. But what's funny is even The Lancet points to the Massachusetts example as one that shows you what we are saying. Clown world, guys. It's just ridiculous where we are. Cycle threshold values were similarly low between people who were fully vaccinated and people who were unvaccinated, not fully vaccinated, and whose vaccine status was unknown. So basically just general. The way you should take that is it didn't make a difference. That indicated a high viral load even among the people who were fully vaccinated. But if you had similar levels among people who were fully vaccinated, people who weren't vaccinated, people who were not fully vaccinated, and people who you didn't even know, there's so many levels of this that are impossible to miss. That means that it's basically making no difference in their viral load in which they can then spread. That's why The Lancet's pointing it out. In Germany, 55.4% of symptomatic COVID-19 cases, or all COVID-19 cases, in patients aged 60 years or older were in fully vaccinated individuals. 55.4%, and this proportion is increasing every week, it says. People who are vaccinated have a lower risk of severe disease, this is what they're saying, but are still a relevant part of the pandemic. Now, I don't agree with that. People who are vaccinated have a lower risk. I mean, right there, you could argue right there that people who are vaccinated yet had a previous infection don't have a lower risk of severe disease. They have an increased risk based on peer-reviewed science I've shown you many times. So that statement is simply invalid at the very least. But on top of that, even if those weren't included, I still argue based on the data that Alex is showing you, that the UK security agency is showing you, that they don't have a lower risk of severe disease. In fact, it's showing you that the people at most risk have a heightened, increased risk. But it says, regardless of that, it is therefore wrong and dangerous to speak of a pandemic of the unvaccinated. The Lancet is saying it is dangerous to say that. And yet, the entire scientific community is saying that. Historically, both the USA and Germany have engendered negative experiences by stigmatizing parts of the population for their skin color or religion. I call this, this study author calls on high-level officials and scientists to stop the inappropriate stigmatization of unvaccinated people who include our patients, colleagues, other fellow citizens. But guess what? This will be ignored, because it does not allow them to continue to make fun of and attack the people that they're trying to go after. But trust the science, though, right? It's crazy. It continues over and over and over. Now, at this point that I was going to go back to, I thought, maybe I forgot it. I hope I'm not missing something. Going forward, here's another study. This is from May 2021, including Peter McCullough. 2021, from May. SARS-CoV-2 mass vaccination, urgent questions on vaccine safety that demand answers from international health agencies, regulatory authorities, governments, and vaccine developers. Can you guess what happened? Nothing. Urgent questions on all these things that we demand from nothing. It says, since the start of the COVID-19 outbreak, a race for testing new platforms designed to confer immunity against SARS-CoV-2 has been rampant and unprecedented, leading to conditional emergency authorizations for various vaccines. Despite progress on early multi-drug therapy for COVID-19 patients, the current mandate is to immunize the world population as quickly as possible. The lack of thorough testing in animals prior to clinical trials, which we talked about, and authorization based on safety data generated during trials that lasted less than 3.5 months, raised questions regarding vaccine safety. This is back in May, remember. The recently identified role in SARS-CoV-2 spike glycoprotein for inducing endothelial damage characteristics of COVID-19, right? Again, thinking about this, same thing, the dramatically increased endothelial inflammatory markers, not the same thing, but same discussion, even in the absence of infection. So the recently identified role of the spike protein itself being able to cause these problems, regardless of whether you're infected, meaning the injection can lead to that problem, is extremely relevant given that most of the authorized vaccines induce endogenous production of spike. Given the high rate of occurrence in adverse effects that have been reported to date, as well as the potential for vaccine-driven disease enhancement, like antibody-dependent enhancement, TH2 immunopathology, autoimmunity, and immune evasion, there is a need for a better understanding of the benefits and risks of mass vaccination, particularly in groups excluded from the trials. Don't forget that. They're forcing this on everybody everywhere, despite the fact that they didn't even include everybody in these massive trials and then followed up with small, quick trials like in children or a pregnant, you know, people, but never really came to the conclusion that these things are safe, as their studies right now find. The data does not show whether it's safe or not. And yet they're pushing it on these people anyway. Minorities were largely underrepresented, and yet here we are forcing it on people all around the world. Despite calls for caution, the risks of SARS-CoV-2 vaccination have been minimized or ignored by health organizations and government authorities. Exactly. And they still are. As for any investigational biomedical program, data safety monitoring boards, DSMBs, and event adjudication committees, EACs, should be enacting risk mitigation, right? If this was an honest world where they were really caring about these things. Now, if DSMBs and EACs do not do so, which they haven't, we will call for a pause in mass vaccination, which I'm sure everybody is right now. If DSMBs and EACs do not exist, then vaccination should be halted immediately, which is pretty much where we are, in particular for demographic groups at highest risk of vaccine-associated death or serious adverse effects during such time as it takes to assemble these boards and commence critical and independent assessments. The groups that are in the highest risk are the groups that are having the highest outcome, negative. Over 80, the highest amount of deaths, hospitalizations, everything. And that's their point. We urge for pluralistic dialogue in the context of health policies, emphasizing critical questions that require urgent answers, particularly if we wish to avoid global erosion of public confidence in exactly what's happening right now. May, nobody cared. How many times this needs to happen? Here is COVID in Scotland. John Sweeney urged to scrap the vaccine passports. Why are they urged to do that on November 18th? Well, because John Sweeney's under pressure to abandon the passports after a study that we just talked about from Oxford found that double jabbed are just as likely to pass on as the unvaccinated. Just as likely. Not some cases, but all the time. That's from Oxford. This is, I mean, all of this, guys. This is an hour and 15 minutes of study to study to study showing you the reality that all of this is very clear. There's no difference. They're dying at more of the rate. It's just, it blows my mind, guys, that we can't see the reality here. And then we see something like White House vaccination coordinator, Dr. Bechara Kuchera, stepping down today. As I said, well, that's quite telling. You know, could mean nothing. Could mean nothing. Or it could mean that there's morally compromising situations that we're seeing. Now, to wrap this up, I'm not sure, it might not be a wrap-up time frame, but this is the latter half that I'm just going to try to fly through these. I want to play you a couple things that I thought were relevant to the beginning of the information that we talked about. Now, this is Congressman Dan Bishop talking about something you'll find very relevant, especially since we were basically involved in the one that started this, which was the school board meeting in regard to masks. He's talking about a cover-up at the Department of Justice. And what he's talking about is the reality that they are notating parents who go to protests for school boards in a FBI watch list, marking you down as a potential terrorist threat for going to a protest. And this is being hidden from you. Take a listen.
Chairman would not entertain as a point of inquiry about the need for Attorney General Garland to return to this committee. And here's what I want to add to what has already been said. Well, let me recap a couple things. It is the last 24 hours since a whistleblower has brought forth an email from the counterterrorism division of the FBI talking about threat tagging incidents in where these parents are protesting against school boards. If that does not shock anybody, everybody on this committee, you've been in Congress too long. And so here's the other thing. That document that had to come out from a whistleblower was sent on October 20, the day before Attorney General Garland testified before us. That document should have been in our hands when we asked Attorney General Garland questions. Because on October 7, immediately seeing that October 4 memo from the Attorney General was breathtakingly problematic, I sent a letter and said, I want to see all correspondence within the Department of Justice connected with or relating to that October 4 memo. It should have been sent to my office the same time it was sent to the FBI. And believe me, there would have been questions to Attorney General Garland based on that. Not only is there a question about whether Attorney General Garland denied knowledge he must have had when he testified to this committee, but that memo was out. It was disturbing enough to an FBI agent to become a whistleblower. It should have been in the hands of Congress. This is a cover-up at the Department of Justice.
It's pretty clear. And alarming. Now, the reason I was pausing right there, guys, I realized I actually made a pretty important mistake that I'm trying to update right now. I don't know how I did this. It looks like I wrote over instead of under in the title, which I'm sure you guys probably picked up on. You know, see, we're all capable of making mistakes. So it looks like, no, I'm not going to try to fix it on that one right now. Anyway, so bottom line was, I'm going to make this really quick and clear here for you guys. I'll do it afterward. It looks like I wrote under, so you can see right here, under 60. And I wrote over on the title for some reason. I'm not sure why. It's the same data. It's exactly what I already went over on the show. But I'm going to correct that. And I'll probably correct it on my next show as well, just to make sure nobody missed that. But going forward, let me do this real quick. And that's really just a typo, to be quite honest. But this, back to the point we're discussing, I don't know why this kind of thing. Why is somebody saying screen? All right, guys, stop distracting me. The screen's, I get it. I don't, okay, anyway, let's keep going forward. So back to the screen, which I was on. This is alarming because he's calling out that they're marking you down as based potentially terrorist threats. If you're protesting at a school board, and I think there was an organization to this, that we saw this happen on the breakdown, and I think there were people that were sent out to these places to make it look like they were being threatening, so they could then circle back and make that the case. Either way, it's quite clear they're keeping this from your view and they're lying to you about this. Oh, I see. I see what you're saying now. My mistake. I was doing the screen thing while we were watching the video. I got you. My mistake. Anyway, regardless, next one. And I'll try to keep updating that in the background. Apologies for that. Now, this one is important as well. Dr. Richard Amerling about guidelines from the WHO. This is what we continue to talk about. This is about how they were forcing this on people. Remember Belarus, for example, who very clearly made it obvious. He showed you the information that made it very clear that they were basically bribing them with billions of dollars from the IMF only if they went along with what they were supposed to do. And this doesn't align with what the actual data is showing you, what the facts are showing you.
So I was, predicting this years ago, and sad to say, it's happened. It's happened. That's why we're here today. This was a conversation with a junior colleague of mine down in the Caribbean. So I was working, teaching medicine at St. George's University down in the Caribbean when COVID hit, and I ended up coming back to the States, and I volunteered as a nephrologist at Bellevue in April 2020 during the height of the pandemic and helping out with the kidney failure there and doing dialysis, et cetera. It was quite an experience. But then again, when I saw the cases start to fall off and ICUs emptied out, I naively thought that this would be over, right? The epidemic was over, it had peaked, it was gone away. No, they kept it going. So this was obviously tyranny from the beginning. So again, why were these pioneering doctors like Zelenko, Richard Urso, Ryan Cole, Brian Tyson, why were they ignored when they were publishing tremendously favorable results and showing and talking about favorable results with ivermectin? Pierre Corey, who we're going to hear today, I believe, is an old friend of mine. We worked together in New York at Beth Israel Medical Center. And when he came out endorsing ivermectin, I knew 100% that it worked. Why? Because I trust him. He's a trusted colleague, and he had experience with it. And this is the way medicine always used to be practiced. So this junior colleague of mine said that, they rely heavily on guidelines from the WHO. This is in the Caribbean, and they do. And there's nothing that supports the use of these drugs like ivermectin in COVID-19. So I said, well, that's the problem. The guidelines are always wrong. And the WHO receives over 50% of its funding from industry. They're corrupt, as are the CDC and the FDA. So she says, so you're saying these agencies that are promoting best practice guidelines in medicine are all corrupt? So then whom do we trust? We might as well just do what we want when treating patients. Do you realize what?
I love that. Right? Oh, so you mean we should think for ourselves? Yeah. Like, that's the point. Yeah. What do you think? We should come to our own conclusions based on our education and what we have in front of us and what the patients are telling us instead of just doing what the WHO says to do from a different location. Yeah, that makes sense. Or, I mean, yes, it does. I mean, obviously it's hilarious to me that this is where we found ourselves, where these are doctors who are just flabbergasted at the idea that they should actually consider their own information, what the person in front of them is actually telling them, what they're seeing. But we know how this, the WHO aspect, the World Economic Forum aspect, is how we're seeing this go forward. We are beginning to see the outlines of the true government. Now, under the idea of the illusion, again, considering all the science we already went through, They knew this from the beginning. And as James points out, anyone who warned about a mission creep towards vaccine passports and compulsory vaccination back in 2020 was dismissed as a conspiracy theorist. They look like prognosticators now, like they know the future. Now, before I even play this clip, I'll bring this one up just so you guys can see that this was something they have been planning for a long time. And those that have seen this show and seen this many times, as well as full shows around this information. But just for those that haven't, roadmap on vaccination. This is from Europa.eu. It's from the European government. And it says from 2018, they started this timeline. It says right here, between 21 and 2022. So exactly where we are right now. Commission for a common vaccination card passport. So they knew back in 2018 at this exact moment would be exactly when this happened. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? Even though back then they weren't, I mean, it's obvious this has been planned, but that's his point that this is clearly what we saw coming and then we were called crazy. Now on Tuesday, the First Minister of Scotland wasn't even trying to pretend about vaccine passports. The scheme is not being deployed to make venues safer, but to punish the unvaccinated into compliance. This is misuse of government power. I was actually just talking with somebody today about this in regard to how this goes back and forth, how they will threaten you with the idea of no exemptions, forced vaccination, and you're going to lose your job and everything like that. And then they let people give in. Well, I need my job and I don't want to go through this again. And they give in. Then it gets pushed back a little bit. Like we see, oh, well, OSHA suspends this or what? Oh, they pulled it back a little bit or there's lawsuits. And then the people pull back a little bit. Then they come back again with it later, which they've done multiple times, hoping that you fall for it the second time, right? It's like people are losing their minds. They don't know where things are. They don't know who to trust. One day mask, one day no mask. One day it's safe, next day it's not. And they just want you to get anxious and upset. So it drives you into just giving in to what they want. So was it ultimately going to end up being forced vaccination with no idea, or was that just a statement to get you to give in? I truly believe they're trying to get to that point, and they would if they needed to, but it's just about forcing you into acquiescing. They want you to accept what they're doing. When they have to force it, it doesn't have the same effect. They need the consent of the governed. They need that. There's a whole topic about why, but regardless, let's listen to what she has to say, which pretty much reveals that this is a scheme, and she calls it that herself.
On the issue of the vaccine certification scheme and the inclusion of a negative test...
I'm just going to grab that. I thought that was much higher. Give me 2 seconds on that. Now, while I'm doing this, the idea of a scheme in general, right? I mean, I thought about this for a second while I was listening to it. I'm like, I don't think the term scheme is very clearly inherently manipulative, right? I mean, that's what it feels like. I mean, since we're talking about it, let's see what the actual literal definition is. A large-scale, systematic plan or arrangement for attaining a particular objective or putting a particular idea into effect. A clever marketing scheme. It just, you know, maybe it's just me, but yeah, I mean, see, here it is, the verb. Make plans, especially in a devious way or with intent to do something illegal or wrong. Okay, so that's number one definition as a verb. That's what we're talking about right now. Isn't that interesting? So either they don't know that, or she doesn't care, or she's willing to like basically admit to you that this was a scheme. Isn't that funny? So here, let me play it from here so you can hear it perfectly, and listen to her call this a scheme to your face.
The issue of the vaccine certification scheme and the inclusion of a negative test, this is a finely balanced judgment. When we have take a decision to introduce a scheme with the express objective of using that, at least in part, to drive up vaccination rates, it makes no sense to have an alternative to vaccine initially as part of that scheme, because then we wouldn't have seen there is perhaps an argument here that one of the reasons why we are currently the most vaccinated part of the UK is that, at least in part, our vaccine certification scheme has helped to drive vaccine uptake. Here, when you have a scheme that is partly about driving up vaccination rates, then it makes no sense to give an alternative to vaccine because then you undermine the objective of your scheme.
Right. It's pretty clear, right? It's not really about, like, if the point is that you don't, like, the alternatives are not just like, the way she frames that makes it quite clear that the alternatives are just a manipulation, because it's not supposed to be that your religious exemption, right? Or your medical exemption are just ploys to get you to do the other thing. Those are supposed to be valid concerns that, oh, well, I have a medical issue. And she's saying, well, screw all that. Doesn't matter whether they could be immunocompromised or pregnant or any number of other variations which make them at risk. How about the fact that it says on their documentation that if you are allergic to anything in this or have had anaphylactic reactions in the past to these things, that you shouldn't do it at all? But according to them, they say, who cares? None of it. Nobody gets to say no, because that's the point, right? Don't we all agree? That's the scheme. It's about getting the most. Yes. Yes, that's the point. We all know that's the point. They're just not supposed to admit it. As we like to say, saying the quiet part out loud. Now, here is another person, an Australian politician, telling you that they're now going to be using the Australian Defense Forces to haul in people who are tested positive for COVID. So it's not a choice. You're being forced quarantined if you get a test that has a high false positive rate. Symptoms or not, if you're told you're sick, you get quarantined forcibly by the army. Now realize here that this is going to stay the same, and it will come to a point where you're told you're sick because of things on the street, the robot walking by that tests everybody and says that you're sick or not. We've seen all these things in real time. Those are literally happening today. So when it gets to a point where they can just tell you you're sick based on other factors because they tested you while you're on the bus, or they had, you know, they've already discussed the sensors that go on the street side or go in buildings that can read it in the air, so they say, sense it in the air. So what happens then? They can just be like, beep, beep, oh, you're sick, get quarantined. And does that turn out that you weren't and there's political reasons for that, or on and on and on, which always happens in every political situation throughout history? Yeah, we don't care about that though. As I said, remember back when forced quarantine and mandatory injections were all called crazy conspiracy theory? Well, Austria is now openly forcing injections. They're now openly forcing quarantine, and there's multiple places that have already done that. When will you two-party illusionists out there see that your mainstream outlet on either side is not on your side? When will you stand up? We need to recognize that the only reason these things get... there's no change, it's because we continue to not see that we're the majority, because we don't recognize the other side of the false two-party paradigm is on your side, even though the majority of all of us recognize this is a problem. It's time to drop these childish political sides. Finally, this is an ideologue. This is what they look like, right? This is where he's saying that you are anti-vaccine, even if you've been injected. Do you remember when we told you that would happen? Do you remember when we told you this would be the step where now you can say no to the third one or any variation of the mandate, and now suddenly you're anti-vax by definition? That's what this politician is telling you. So welcome to the world where you have if you refuse the 14th booster, suddenly you're anti-vax because you now are against the mandate. So he's going to frame it. Here's what he has to say.
Do you think at all that your rhetoric around calling people anti-vaxxers, some of whom were vaccinated, has had an impact at all on vaccine take-up in parts of the territory?
No. And I'll repeat it. If you are anti-mandate, you are absolutely anti-vax. I don't care what your personal vaccination status is. If you support, champion, give a green light, give comfort to, support anybody who argues against the vaccine, you are an anti-vaxxer.
So you can't give support to somebody who is arguing against this? Like, even though it's their choice or they believe it, or maybe the possibility that you're wrong, you can't even go over and say, hey, you know, good, you know, I support you in supporting what you believe. Nope, you're now anti-vax. Doesn't matter that you've had all 9 injections. Doesn't matter. You're over here saying, I support your right to make your own choice. You're anti-vax. That's literally what he's saying. Look at this man's eyes. Look at his body language. This guy is a maniac, in my opinion. This is what an ideologue looks like. This guy is brimming over with emotion and irrational mindsets. This is what the people, these guys frothing at the mouth with the way, I mean, look, just look at this with the volume off as we're talking. This guy is aggressive. And what he's saying is, you're absolutely anti-vax if you do anything against what we're telling you to do. That is what an authoritarian talks like. I mean, we just need to recognize what these people are, what they're doing. And they're getting more and more and more radical. It's getting crazy to the point to where now even like we're watching members of Congress in the U.S. or other places speak as if it's you, it's like the way the Babylon Bee represented them a year ago. They are becoming cartoonish representations of themselves in a rapid pace. This guy is telling you, you are an anti-vaxxer if you do anything against what they're forcing down your throat. Talk about self-serving. And I agree. He does look like a psycho. He looks like a maniac. When a politician is like shaking and like vibrating with his anger about what, there's a problem. These people are not thinking rationally. Now, Fauci here to tell you exactly what we continue to tell you. Now, I think what we're going to do here is I'm just going to breeze through this at the end just because I feel like it, hour and 35. I don't really feel like listening to Dr. Fauci right now. Tony Fauci on Sunday told ABC's This Week Americans may need their Pfizer booster shots every 6 months. Exactly. And that's what he'll go on to say, that that's probably what's going to happen, that every 6 months, most likely you're going to have, yep, exactly like we told you 2 years ago. Yeah, because we're crazy conspiracy theorists. Anthony Fauci says Joe Biden is open to changing the definition of fully vaccinated to include boosters. Yeah, that part of it too, just like we kept telling you. So the reality is that it's going to be including boosters as the next part, right? It's going to be every 6 months, just like Israel's already doing, just like multiple countries are already letting you see is going to happen. They're all on this together, guys. Then they're also telling you that they're going to change fully vaccinated to include boosters, even though they're kind of waffling. It's already happened. It's already happening. I've already shown you on government websites. It's very obvious. You are not fully vaccinated unless you have what they tell you the next booster is going to be. I mean, for crying out loud, in France, it already has four listed on your vaccine passport. And of course, as we said just the other day, in Gibraltar, according to this doctor, not according to him, this is the data I showed you as well, but this doctor's pointing out, which we've shown you in Gibraltar, which is, by the way, the most vaccinated place on Earth, because they have 100% of the applicable population vaccinated. 100%. And 40% with the booster. So they're almost halfway through the booster forcing two, and they're through the roof. And by the way, not just cases either. The same thing we're seeing everywhere else. They are having a problem. And if you even remotely believe in their narrative, there's no way this makes sense. Now, the last part here, the actual last part, just the sad reality that this stuff is happening in real time. As you're screaming that we're crazy anti-vaxxers and conspiracy theorists, you're placating, ignoring this kind of damage to people because it's really happening. And even those narratives admit that it is happening. Yet you simultaneously call this fake news without even understanding the details. How is it possible that they can tell you that this kind of thing can happen, that we prove that it's possible, but super rare? And then this woman comes out and says, I've had a series of aneurysms less than a year after this battle with COVID. Oh, and then, of course, well, excuse me, this is specifically about COVID-19. But the point being, as I rattle on, is about these kind of stories and how the reality that people are struggling with this are being called fake. They're being told that you are fake, even though we admitted that this can happen. Myocarditis, newborn baby deaths. Now, the point of this one is essentially what we continue to see here is that this woman is suffering from a series of aneurysms less than a year after her battle with COVID-19. But one thing that they do not get into is whether or not she's been injected or whether or not that causes a problem or whether or not these factors play a relevant role in this conversation. Why is that not being discussed? Because that's not a factor to them. They don't even consider it. And same with this point I'm going to get to in this video coming up next, that in this discussion of spontaneous abortion after vaccination, in the study itself, it discussed that it was not possible to assess vaccination status in the analysis. I can't highlight it, but you can see it right after here. It's the 6th, 2021. It was not possible to assess vaccination status in the analysis. This was the analysis of specifically, trying to get that right spot here, of whether or not this, here we go, stillbirth after and with COVID-19. And it's the same point. That's why we brought this first one up, is that if we're unable to decide or factor in whether or not the vaccine is included or involved, then this is meaningless. Because all of these are being done during a time frame when a lot of these people, I can almost promise you, have an injection. That plays a factor. So if this woman got COVID-19, then got the injection like they're all telling her to do, and that, of course, as we know, led to increased effort problems because she previously had natural immunity and the infection, both of which lead to problems in your body, antibody-dependent enhancement, and increased adverse events. Both studies from peer-reviewed studies from both actually from the journal Infection show you that. The question is, why wouldn't that be figured in? Why wouldn't they consider whether this experimental injection in the middle of that process led to these aneurysms, which, by the way, we alternatively have shown you can, or respectively, I guess that's the right word for it, can cause. They've admitted that it can cause aneurysms, but we won't factor that into our conversation. I just talked about this part of it. FDA report finds all-cause mortality higher in the vaxxed and big spike in newborn baby deaths investigated. This is in Scotland. Right here. Now, it's just so we can see this clearly for those that were already dismissing this. Every show, which you guys know, every show, regardless of what I talk about, there's some Yahoo out there going, you're fake news and you don't know because did you go to medical school? So the point is that for that same person who just did the same thing last time, well, here it is continually on mainstream media, which I don't know why that makes it more valid to you, but apparently it does. From the Scottish Sun, baby tragedy, probe launched as 21 newborn babies die in Scotland in 1 month. All right, so suddenly now it's no longer fake news because you can read it on a mainstream website. Obviously, this is happening. And obviously, it's enough for even the government itself to be like, whoa, okay, there's something happening here. Now, if this was because of COVID, well, wouldn't we have seen this happening back in 2020 when it was more severe? Well, yeah, that would be the argument. All I'm saying is, why aren't we asking these questions? This is clearly perfectly correlated with the increase of injections in specifically pregnant women and the population in general. Because remember, they've been pushing it on pregnant women specifically over the last so many months. And the data shows you on their own website that they don't know whether that's safe or not. And here appears to be the outcome. And as he finds in here that they spontaneous abortion after vaccine, they tried to claim that it's not necessarily the case. And they and more in this video in general goes into this, but there's obvious data that backs this up. And while that's happening, here's what the mainstream's coming out with. Perfectly timed too. Isn't it funny how this stuff just happens to be perfect simultaneously coming out? You know, we're just supposed to believe that this was just normally looking into, right? This only became a topic once we were pointing to problems after vaccination. So now they pump this out. Research links, right? Because this is what they do with these half-heart studies where they just find this abstract connection. COVID-19 in pregnancy with stillbirth. Now, I'm not even trying to argue that you couldn't argue that these things could lead to issues with stillbirths. Having the flu or pneumonia during pregnancy could lead to potential problems. My point is that there is no way on top of that to, again, because they don't try to differentiate between those who have had an injection in that process somewhere. But it says pregnant women with COVID-19 face increased chances for stillbirths compared with uninfected women. And that risk spiked to 4 times higher after the Delta variant emerged. Of course it did. Now, again, is that because the Delta variant is something different or because the Delta variant is used to overshadow, to cloak, to cover up all of the things that the vaccine is causing? That would certainly line up. But of course, new government data shows, while they ignore all their own data that shows you what we're talking about. Regardless, it's perfectly timed, is it not? The real the data and the reality of that data has continued to show you things like this. And this is directly from Pfizer, as we've shown you, that they've been covering up the reproductivity issues, hiding this from you, not reporting it all. Now, on to myocarditis. This is just one story that I want you to hear from Nashville, Angela, doing a great job. It shows you that these people are posting their stories, even though, of all things, myocarditis is the most obvious. They've been forced to admit that it's actually an increased risk. That so if you didn't get the injection, there's a risk of myocarditis that just naturally occurs. And what they keep pretending is that it's either the same or less or whatever. They've admitted that if you take that injection, it increases dramatically your risk of eventually possibly getting myocarditis or pericarditis or myopericarditis. And yet most people still don't even know that. So here is a story about a woman posting a story about her husband getting myocarditis, diagnosed by the doctor, and she still gets censored.
Yesterday, I shared a video talking about my husband's recent myocarditis diagnosis. All I wanted to do was share our story. I want to be heard. Because we're not the only ones that are going through this right now. When that video reached 16,000 views this morning, this is what TikTok did.
Look at that. Removed for violating community guidelines. Right. So ask yourself this, guys. How in the world can TikTok claim to be able to find out whether or not she's telling the truth? Spoiler alert, they can't. They don't know. So understand, they're not censoring this because they prove that she's lying or that she's spreading misinformation. They're censoring it because they have to censor things that talk about vaccines causing myocarditis. That's their community guidelines. Even though they've admitted that it can cause myocarditis. How do you not see out there, for those that are doubting what we're talking about, how obvious that is? That is a willful choice to remove things that at the very least could be true. So how are they, they're the arbiters of, like, they're not even arbiters of truth anymore in this context. They're the arbiters of the narrative. You're not allowed to talk about this very real possibility. Even if a doctor tells you that's what happened. You just can't miss how obvious this is, guys. Here's another example. A 14-year-old male had a stroke one day after the first dose. Cerebral thrombosis. At school, here's the actual FAERS report. 14-year-old, North Carolina. Cerebral thrombosis. I mean, is it possible this was a random occurrence? Sure. Of course it is. We're always willing to point that out. But what nobody else is willing to do on any other side is ask whether or not this was caused by the injection or care whether it was caused by the injection. Especially when we know that the injection can absolutely cause cerebral thrombosis. They've admitted that. And yet this is fake news until they've proven it, even though they'll never even try to prove it. Because they've never followed up with any one of the children's deaths, let alone the side effects. That's Newsweek pointed that out. Teen dies of cardiac arrest weeks after receiving the Pfizer injection. These are everywhere. This was 11/15/21. Then guess what that leads to, guys? And this is a quick little deviation into the technocratic future they're building for you. Guess what? A South Florida teen in the middle of the biggest pandemic in a century, apparently when they're all overwhelmed, they don't have any room for anybody in any hospital, but apparently this teen found room. And during that process, they installed the first state-of-the-art implanted pediatric heart device. Of course they did, right? Because that's just exactly what makes sense to branch out in more experimental tests during the biggest pandemic in a century where you can barely factor in any nurses anywhere while you're firing half the staff. But apparently they found time for this. The first in-state, to get implantable pediatric heart device. Do you imagine if we talked about an implantable anything, we're fake news. Oh, conspiracy theorists. And right now in real time, they're essentially, I mean, this is crazy to me that we're talking about pediatric heart problems and when at a time we've never seen this. From Google Trends is showing you that it's through the roof, myocarditis, all sorts of things. And on top of that, we're seeing that they're admitting it's never been this high. We're seeing all sorts of other things like strokes and heart attacks, children dropping dead on the field playing sports. Entire countries investigating how this has never been this high and athletes collapsing. It's unprecedented. And here we are going, oh, by the way, we're justifying, rationalizing implantable devices for heart diseases for children. Guys, this is scary to me because whether or not you feel that this should be an option, if an adult wants it for their child, if they have some heart problem that was there regardless of COVID-19, well, that's fine. You should have made, as always, it's your choice and your right to make your choices. But to see this being justified and rationalized now screams. I mean, this is, as Helen Budinski points out, a forest of red flags. Because this is where it's all going. And it's all going to go in this direction. The injection, the passport, everything. And they're telling you that, guys. That's what's crazy. They're openly saying that's the next step. That's the fourth industrial revolution that they're telling you you're in right now. It just matters about, it depends on whether you're paying attention. Oh, and don't worry, though, because Fauci's already said that babies and toddlers could be eligible for this injection by 2022. Great. Because they need it? No. Because they're at risk from COVID? No. Because they can spread COVID? No. Oh, I see, because it's the narrative. I got it. Because that's what they want you to do. Because they want everybody everywhere to get this injection because of some other thing they're not telling you. Even though all the information shows you what a risk it puts them at. Nobody's trying to explain why this makes sense. Other than to say that giving children this injection will lead to herd immunity. Except for the fact that we already just discussed, remember, that there's other locations that already have admitted they reached what at least they tell you is herd immunity. Such as the entirety of the UK. That's telling you that they already have 98.1% of the adult population with antibodies. Okay, well, doesn't that mean it's over for them? No, because it's not doing any difference. And it's continuing down the same path, which shows you what? It shows you that this is not going to stop because the injections are causing the problem. But let's just keep jamming it down the kids' arms and down their throats, putting it in their arms to keep you safe. At least that's the narrative. It's not what's happening, though. Even in Israel, they're right now injecting children 5 to 11. This is a criminal effort. It could not be more clear. Here's a great example, as Nashville Angela points out. Odd. I can't find any medicine or supplements that don't warn people on the label to discontinue use if they have a negative reaction. I challenge you right now. All of them say that. If you have a negative reaction, discontinue use and speak to a doctor. Guess what doesn't say that? The thing that comes with a zillion different negative reactions that are totally safe and effective and meant to happen. Yeah, just think about that for a second. But if it's a COVID shot, people insist you take it after a reaction as long as you're still breathing, and medical exemptions are often denied. Yep. It's all right there. If you have the smallest amount of discernment, you can recognize why that's ridiculous. And don't forget, people, that everybody in the world is standing up if you just pay attention and look anywhere other than the mainstream media. This is Rome, Italy. The revolution will not be televised. Oh, wait, I thought I had the video on there too. Oh, that's too bad. Let's see. I removed my tweet with the video that I did have. I thought that was the video. Well, there you go. Either way, guys, there's a gigantic, gigantic protest that took place. Which, I mean, it looks like, I don't know, I'm not going to try to guess the number. But just realize that you are not alone, guys. The world is standing up. And it just is about, I mean, right now, there's protests happening in the U.S. too. The media just doesn't show you. And then, of course, the people that are stuck on the two-party paradigm will act like, I don't know why Americans are so lazy, which, by the way, there's a large portion of that, just like there is anywhere. But you need to recognize that there is a lot of people standing up in this country, as well as every country. Don't listen to the mainstream media. Either side of it. Stop playing into the two-party paradigm, because they will trick you. You are the majority. People are rising up. Stop listening to the mainstream media. Tens of thousands protest Belgium's tighter COVID-19 rules. Finally, a collection of clips from the protests around the world yesterday. All over the place. Austria, Sydney, Croatia, Belfast, Lithuania, Manchester, Milan, Vancouver, Toronto, New York. I mean, guys, it's everywhere. Portugal, Rome. I mean, and it's in the United States is the point. There are protests happening here. We need to see that it's happening. If you sit back and act like we're already lost, then you're going to be already lost. As a great saying my dad used to always to say when I was a kid, there's two ways to get to the top of an oak tree. Sit on an acorn or start climbing. Bottom line is, you can sit and let and wait for things to happen around you, or you can make them happen for yourself. Start climbing. That's the reality. Thank you all for being here today and continuing to push this information out, because we are making a difference, as I said in the beginning, and I know you feel that. It's hard to feel it when you're watching what they're trying to tell you, but they're always trying to deceive you. Look at the data they're putting out. Look at the propaganda they're shoving in your face. Just stay your course, stand your ground. Because you need to see that they're scared of you. They know that you can make a difference, especially when you work with the person next to you. I know a lot of people don't want that to be the case and want to pretend like they're not scary. They are scared of what you're capable of, at the very least. So show them what you're capable of. I love you all, as always. Question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.
I see all the people led into deception by the very men bound to care, blinded by the promises, unknowingly sold despair. So leave your herd of sheep and follow this shepherd to revolutionary ends. world that you knew has changed around you. It's all become a money game. It's all become a money game. It's all become a money game. Are you ready for? Are you ready for? Are you ready for? Revolution. Revolution. The revolution's now. It's happening all around you. If you cannot see, pull aside the curtain and see the war machine. It's time for you to rise up. Rise up and prepare. So arm your fellow man, 'cause it's become destructive to its own ends. The world that you knew has changed around you. It's all become a money game. It's all become a money game. It's all become a money game. Are you ready for? Are you ready for? Are you ready for the revolution? Revolution. The revolution's now. It's happening all around you. If you cannot see, pull aside the curtain and see the war machine. Time for you to rise up. Rise up and prepare. So arm your fellow man, 'cause it's become destructive to its own ends. The world that you knew has changed around you. It's all become a money game. It's all become a money game. It's all become a money game. Are you ready for? Are you ready for? Are you ready for the revolution? The revolution. Revolution's now. It's happening all around you. If you cannot see, pull aside the curtain and see the war machine. It's time for you to rise up. Rise up and prepare. So arm your fellow man, 'cause they become destructive to their own ends. World that you knew has changed around you. It's all become a money game. It's all become a money game. It's all become a money game. Are they ready?